This is Mac Duncan. Welcome back to Essays from the Middle. This is episode 5. Episode 4 was 2 weeks ago. If you're one of the two people that have listened to all the episodes, first, thank you. And I'm sorry if you were expecting something last week. We took some time to get away over the July 4 holiday, which cut into the week a little bit. And by the time I got back here, I just didn't feel like diving back in. So I took the whole week off. I can't feel too bad since I have neither listeners nor patrons, so I have no one to answer to but me. I'm not 100% sure how many more of these I will do. I know once I return to my teaching job in August, it'll be next to impossible for me to continue this until I have another extended break in June 2023. This week's show will be very pop culture heavy and very spoiler heavy. This may or may not be your only warning. Let's get started. Marvel has a problem. Marvel has a problem with redheads. Marvel has a problem with redheads named Scarlet. That includes actors named Scarlet or characters named Scarlet. Scarlett Johansson is unlikely to return to the MCU, since they waited until after they killed her off in Endgame to give Black Widow a solo movie. And with that solo movie, Scarlett Johansson sued Marvel for not giving her a cut of the streaming revenue, which existed in place of July 2020's non-existent box office receipts. But that's old news. The slightly newer news is with Scarlet Witch, also known as Wanda Maximoff, as played by Elizabeth Olsen in the MCU. Olsen, as Wanda, has been building goodwill with the MCU audience since the character's 2015 debut in Age of Ultron. Wanda has existed in a state of perpetual grief, first for her parents, then for her brother, then for the android she loved, finally for the children she imagined into being. As she struggled with her powers, and ultimately her place in the world, she leaned heavily on Vision, a sentient android brought to life by one of the Infinity Stones. Regrettably, Wanda had to take this stone from Vision, along with his life, in an effort to keep the stone from Thanos, an effort that ultimately failed. After surviving Civil War, Infinity War, and Endgame, Wanda's grief spiral took us through the very strange but surprisingly poignant WandaVision. Presented as a goofy recreation of various sitcoms, the program is actually Wanda hiding from her loss by summoning a limited resurrection of Vision and the children she wished she could have with him. Summed up beautifully by Vision's line, "What is grief, if not love persevering?" We watch Wanda suffer and continue to suffer, and are led to believe that she has found acceptance. Then, Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness happens. When this film was initially promoted, I led myself to believe that it would be the fallout from Doctor Strange's choices in Spider-Man No Way Home, that Stephen would have to fix some things he broke, and Wanda would probably attempt to exploit this to get what she wants. Not entirely the case. Wanda goes full villain from the start of the film. Why Wanda? Why is Wanda the villain? Why not Kang the Conqueror or a Loki variant? Did it have to be Wanda? Now, the fact that she is not whole or okay after the events of WandaVision, that does ring true. The 5 or 7 stages of grief are not truly universal. Grief follows its own agenda. Acceptance can take years, if it ever comes. So the fact that Wanda still wants her family, well, of course she does. Grief manifests as anger? Okay. But the anger doesn't have to be homicidal. It's disappointing that Doctor Strange, the character who is supposed to be the hero, makes no effort to help Wanda, a person he initially approaches as a friend. Instead, this grieving person, the person we've been building allegiance for the past 7 years, is treated with no empathy. The multiverse idea implies that these universes are infinite. Somewhere among them, there's a universe where Wanda's kids not only exist, but are looking for her. Instead of giving her this option, Wanda is pushed to collapse a mountain on top of herself and in order to end the evil magic. A pretty raw deal considering the rules that have been established in the MCU. First, multiverses. It's right there in the title. As we said, there's got to be at least one where Wanda can find peace without destroying herself. Also, time travel. Time travel without consequences. Thanos killed Gamora for the Soul Stone. The Guardians of the Galaxy now have another Gamora from another timeline thanks to time travel. Steve Rogers missed out on a life with Peggy Carter because he was frozen for 75 years. Thanks to time travel, he decided to stop in the late 1940s and reunite with Peggy after dropping off the Infinity Stones. Wanda could have gone back to a time and found Vision before the Thanos attack on Earth and pulled him into another timeline. Wanda loses her children, goes on a homicidal rampage, and has to suffer and die. Hawkeye loses his family, goes on a homicidal rampage, sacrifices Black Widow, gets his family back after the Hulk snap. Gotta say, Marvel, not a good look. Coming off a little bro-heavy. I appreciate that the complex emotions connected to grief are finding their way into art, but pop culture has a way to go before they really get it right. Let's talk Star Trek. Earlier this month, Paramount Plus finished releasing the first season of Strange New Worlds, the latest prequel series in the Star Trek franchise. If you're a Star Trek fan, you are obviously aware of the original series' rare distinction of having two pilots. Not only did the show have two pilots, but in the subsequent 5 decades following the original show's airing, both pilots are now canon. Strange New Worlds is essentially a version of Star Trek that would have come from the first pilot, The Cage. Only now it has a more modern TV tech and a cultural awareness that is more contemporary to the 21st century than its 1960s predecessor. I dug all 10 episodes, and I'm looking forward to future seasons. I was initially hesitant because I'm a bit fed up with IPs doing prequels. But I can't appreciate the level of love and care that went into this show. It's filled with references and fan service for sure, but it does make an effort to do the kind of storytelling that Star Trek is known for. I do have one complaint, though. And now we are in spoiler territory. In the 9th episode, they killed off Chief Engineer Hemmer, played by Bruce Horak. The character of Hemmer was an Einar, a race of Andorians who are born blind. While it's not the first time we've seen a blind character heading up the Enterprise's engine room, we all remember Geordi LaForge from Next Generation. But LeVar Burton, the actor playing Geordi, was never blind. Hemmer's actor, however, is. Bruce Horak is legally blind. This is a level of representation we haven't yet seen in Star Trek, or in a lot of media. For decades, actors have been applauded and rewarded for, putting quotes on this, bravely, quote-unquote bravely, playing disabled people. As a culture, we are just now beginning to recognize that celebrating an abled person playing a disabled one is itself ableist. So, it was wonderful to witness this inclusion. And it didn't stop at token inclusion. Hemmer was a fun, interesting character. His interactions with the rest of the cast were poignant, memorable, and often funny. In a cast of really well-written and played characters, Hemmer was among the best. It's like a Joss Whedon sin, an on-screen one, to have us love a character so much only to take him away. It hurts that not only he was an amazing character, but how this important representation has been tossed aside. There were two other characters killed in this episode. Their deaths were almost comically telegraphed when they were abruptly introduced in the cold open, as if they had been there the whole time. In my humble opinion, had they introduced these other characters in earlier episodes, allowed us to care that they were there in episode 9, then their deaths could have had the intended impact of Hemmer's, and Hemmer could go on contributing to the future stories. In a post-show interview with Will Wheaton, Bruce Horak indicated that he knew this was coming as soon as he was hired. The showrunners always intended to kill Hemmer in episode 9. That doesn't really make the choice a good one, but he was treated a little better than Denise Crosby and Terry Farrell, actors who were killed off of Next Generation and Deep Space Nine, respectively, due to off-camera disputes. Crosby wanted out because the writers didn't have anything important for Tasha Yar to do, and Farrell wanted to downgrade to fewer episodes in Season 7, but was rudely booted off by execs who wouldn't negotiate. So, one complaint aside, the show is still pretty good. I'm hoping Bruce Horak will continue on screen in some capacity, with or without Star Trek. And I hope Star Trek continues to be inclusive in new ways, and gives those characters more than a few episodes. I used to call myself a filmmaker. I don't make films anymore. I don't intend to. Not really sure if I had the right to ever call myself a filmmaker. I don't anymore. 15 years ago, I got a group of friends together for a 48-hour film challenge. Basically, you're given a genre, a line of dialogue, and a prop. And starting at the designated time, you have 48 hours to write, shoot, edit, and deliver a 3-minute short, which will have to include the genre, line, and prop you were given. It's a fun, silly exercise for aspiring filmmakers. It motivates you to work fast and efficiently, and you end up with a complete product at the end. I would do a few of these in the years following, mostly with outcomes ranging from the ridiculous to the objectively bad. But that first one, the one from July 2007, it's probably my favorite. I think what sets it apart from the other pieces was the fact it was truly collaborative. We agreed when we got the genre horror that we would make it an homage to Ed Wood, that gave us license to be absurd and cheesy. So long as everything was intentional, it would work. Four of us essentially improvised and transcribed a script. We had already planned to use the old Paramount Theater in Casa Grande, so that gave us the perfect retro B-movie backdrop. We called up our cast members who had agreed to be in it and told them who their characters were and what kind of costumes they should be bringing down. We ended up shooting enough coverage for a 5 to 10 minute piece, but it needed to be down to 3. I applaud Sean Clayton, who took the task of editing the film. He got it to around 5 minutes, showed me a cut, I suggested where we could trim so we can get it to 3. He delivered, and our film was done on time. We called it Menagerie of Space. A few years later, I would go back and re-edit a director's cut of the film. It made me appreciate Sean's work at a new level. The film didn't win any prizes, but it did get me into my first film festival and my first Comic-Con. Friends who worked on it with me still quote lines back. It was successful because I was able to put my ego aside and let others create. Ironically, my second favorite piece is called Alone, which I did 100% by myself out of necessity. So this is probably the only segment in this podcast that I have not written out before I have recorded it. And you'll probably recognize that in the pauses and stammering that will accompany this piece. But I wanted to be unscripted and completely honest in this portion. This, for now, is it. For the foreseeable future, this is the end of Essays from the Middle. And I decided that I would end it here, mainly because I don't feel the need to do it anymore. And I make it sound more profound than it is. It's, you know, not as if I have thousands of people hanging on my every word waiting for my next recording. Nobody out there. But I didn't do it for a huge audience. I did this for me. And for now, to the best of my understanding, I've done all I can with this. I don't know if this is going to be the last one forever. Okay, just to further illustrate how unfiltered this last piece is, I had to pause my recording to take a phone call from my wife. So there's that. So I'm a I have to repeat myself since I don't know what I was talking about a minute ago. I do know that I am ending this, and I'm not sure if I said this already, but I don't know if this is going to be forever. I do know, and I have mentioned this before, that at the time of recording, I have 2 weeks left on my summer recess before I go back to my teaching job. And then as of August 1st, I am back in the classroom full time. So I definitely will not have time to give any attention to this. And that said, yeah, that's 2 more weeks. And I do not want to spend those last 2 weeks thinking about a podcast nobody's listening to and isn't making any kind of impact or not really helping me anymore. So yeah, I want to give the last 2 weeks of that time. I want to give attention to my wife and to myself, and I would like to write. I'm a little frustrated that I really haven't written anywhere near as much as I thought I wanted to in these past few weeks. I don't want to feel shame about that. I really want to forgive myself for not utilizing the time that way. And I feel like I'm feeling myself becoming emotional about it right now, and yeah, I didn't know I was this upset about it, but I guess I put a lot of pressure on myself to be productive and deliver. And that's a big piece of what our culture tells us, is that when you have time, be productive. That's definitely the message we got when the pandemic started and the whole world shut down and everybody had to stay home and stay put. And the whole online culture was, okay, you got the time now. You don't have to commute to the office anymore. So now that you got some downtime, take up a hobby, learn how to make some sourdough starter and, you know, grow your own garden or whatever. And if you're not using this time to be productive, shame on you. And there's a handful of people who spoke up and said, you know what? Don't feel bad if you're not productive. You're going through a trauma. You are the only one who knows what you need to do to cope with that. And when I would forget that sometimes, because there would be times when I wouldn't do anything. And I would just stare at the wall, or I would just play video games for a couple hours, or stare at YouTube for an entire day. I could sit at my social media sites and shoot out angry tweets. And that's not really productive, but sometimes it's just what you need to do to cope. And I don't want to say that recording this and making this and putting this together that it wasn't helpful. It was nice to try something new and challenge myself and dust off a few skills that had almost atrophied. You know, I hadn't really done anything with editing in a while. And so I was exercising those skills when I would piece this together. But yeah, particularly in the past couple weeks, it's become a chore. And I feel like that's something that really kills art for the artist, is when the art itself becomes work, when it becomes a chore, when it becomes something that you are procrastinating to avoid. Then it's not satisfying. And I feel like, you know, art has a lot more joy connected to it. And this is not universal, but, you know, it's been my experience that I get a lot more pleasure out of doing something creative when it itself is an act of procrastination from things that are considered more important, things that other people are depending on. And right now, this is not serving either of those. Nobody's depending on this. I'm doing this purely for me, And if I'm the only one who cares and I don't actually care about it, then there's no point in doing it. So this is it. This will be the end of this podcast for now. I'm leaving the door open. There could be more essays from the middle, maybe next summer. I might do a special one-off between now and then. If, for no other reason, if something strikes me as like, okay, the only way I can express whatever it is I'm thinking about in relationship to this thought or idea is to get in front of this microphone and rant about it for 5 minutes, okay, maybe I publish it, maybe I don't. Maybe I repurpose this for something else. But that's it. I honestly don't want to do this anymore. And that's okay. If you're one of the handful of people who chose to listen to this, thanks. But I'm not going away forever. I'll be out there in some form or another. Please take a look at our comic books at aucomics.com. Hopefully one day the Torch Theater will be open again and I'll periodically show up there maybe once or twice a month. Or hey, you might bump into me in real life. Everyone take care of yourself. I'll talk to you later. Thank you for listening to Essays from the Middle. Essays from the Middle is a product of Carefree Write Enterprises, LLC. Today's music provided by Alex Grohl, Julius H., Alex Make Music, and Music Unlimited. These and other tracks available at pixabay.com. Available episodes of Essays from the Middle can be found at Podbean, Apple Podcast, Google Podcast, Spotify, Amazon Music, Pandora, and YouTube. For early access and bonus recordings, please support our Patreon page at patreon.com/MacDuncan, MacDuncan. All material for Essays from the Middle, written and recorded by Mac Duncan. Copyright 2022, Carefree Write Enterprises, LLC, all rights reserved.